From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for July 16th, 2017. This is our weekly look at the politics and policies that shape our lives, moving from Chicago to Springfield all the way to Washington, D.C. So, yes, time to grab that Sunday paper, go pour that cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your week off to a great start. Well, Dave, I have to tell you, I was so burned out by all the activities in Springfield that I took last week off. And that's like the first time in I can't remember where I've had a week off.
You had a vacation?
Well, a staycation. But but still, it was so nice not to have to look at emails and tweets and, you know, I kept up on things.
That is kind of nice, isn't it?
Well, it was nice because I didn't have to work to react or, you know, act on those kinds of things. So it was, nice to be kind of, that's not totally being unplugged. When you were on the road trip with your father, that was unplugged.
That was unplugged, yes, that's right.
But
as soon as we got anywhere near a cell tower, we were plugged.
Thing just loaded right up,
yeah.
Didn't it?
Beep, yes. Beep, 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 beep.
I would throw stuff into the, you know, trash bin and the junk email bin and stuff, but occasionally I did sneak in the office to do a little bit of paperwork, and there were like 200 emails just in.
Wow.
Yeah, and a lot of it was, we had the president going to Bastille Day in Paris, and so you get these emails arriving at various times overnight and things like that, but these pool reports and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And it was just nice not to have to really, really worry about it and see how the rest of the world views this kind of stuff.
Let the rest of the world worry about it for a little while.
But it's like I told you earlier this morning, it figures I would take a week off when it's the All-Star baseball break, and so there was no baseball on. They had the ESPY Awards on the day after, but it's the deadest day, sports day in the country. It's the day after the Major League All-Star game.
With no games going on before and after.
No games, and there's very few other sports activities going on.
Quite football training camp yet.
Yeah, no, and I was, you know, flipping through, and I think I found bocce ball.
Did you watch any hockey reruns?
I thought about it.
Did you really?
I really did. I got to read a little bit, and that was kind of nice. Some longer form stories and The Atlantic and Sports Illustrated and things like that.
So. And it's nice when you're not in a hurry to just sit down and read and give it your undivided attention and clear your mind of other things.
Right, and not feel the pressure of having to do something,
right,
or know you have to do something.
You know, so often, at least speaking for myself, you know, I'll be reading something, you know, that might be, you know, something leisurely, but in the back of my mind, I've got, okay, you need to get back to doing this
productive
later.
You need to be productive.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was the best part, was just not being managed by the clock or by work or anything.
Managed
else.
By the clock.
Yeah.
And how about it?
It was a great change of pace. And I can't say I feel totally rejuvenated, but that helped. That helped a whole lot.
Yeah.
But So much going on. There's always something.
Especially after the mood you were in the week before.
All right, I apologize.
No, I know. Yeah, I was being Mr. Cheerful. How you doing?
Yes, you were being Sunshine Schwanny.
How do you think I'm doing?
At least I was concise with my answers.
You were, and you were truthful. you weren't shying away from anything.
No, I was not hiding my feelings.
No, you weren't.
That truly just time away from everything, and cooked a little bit, and made that bacon blue cheese guacamole.
The guacamole,
not
the coleslaw, but now, the
I had that before, but I yes, I made actually bacon gorgonzola guacamole, and I know it kind of sounds weird, but put that on a fajita you've just made on the grill. It works, trust me.
That does sound good in a fajita from the grill.
A little jalapeno in the guacamole, a little onion.
I think we're going to have to order out breakfast here before
and some chipotle Tabasco sauce.
All stirred in.
So I will share it with you.
Okay.
We'll see if maybe post that up on the website.
I saw your friend yesterday at the Tree of Knowledge.
Pardon me?
Our musician friend.
Oh, yes.
Playing the music of the river.
Yes.
And, you were gone. You were involved with other things. But there he was, playing away all three notes yesterday when I came in for a while.
I know... Bob Ferguson played a little bit of street music that he had found from the internet. And actually, apparently the guy in that group sent me a message saying he'd be happy to come down here to Michigan Avenue and play. Because remember, they were the ones I said, you know, why can't we get them over here
right.
North Michigan Avenue?
Yeah.
So I'll send them a note and let them know that they should just take up space there. They have their licenses and stuff. And frankly, apparently this trio, they play during the day when they don't have, you know, gigs going on and stuff like that. So
years ago, I saw a quartet outside, what is now the Cultural Center. It was still the Chicago Public Library. It was when it was in kind of transition,
right.
You know, when they... before they finished the Harold Washington Library, but these guys were good. They really were. They sounded, you remember the group, the Shylights?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's kind of what they reminded me of. They were really, really good, just standing at Randolph in Michigan, singing away, and I thought, man, now that's impressive.
Wow.
That is really good. And I only saw them once. I haven't seen them since. So
really?
That's been, like I say, many years ago.
Maybe they got
now.
Signed up to
they
a
might
recording
have gotten
contract.
Signed up, yeah.
Well, there was somebody right across the street here from the Allstate Showcase studio on Tribune Tower, across the street next to the Wrigley Building, performing songs in a gorilla costume. Yeah.
Music from Jungle Book by any chance?
I wasn't listening. You know, it was like...
They were performing in gorilla costumes?
No, just one guy.
Oh, just one
guy. Yes.
Well, it's an attention getter.
I suppose, you know, hey, I went to Chicago for the weekend. What'd you see? Oh, a guy performing songs in a gorilla costume.
Suit.
Yeah. Try the architectural tour next time, folks.
My favorite is when tourists come in and ask, which way is the lake?
Yeah, well, see.
Why get the water?
See, yeah, Sam, that's what I was going to say. Is
where
you,
is
you,
the lake?
You've forgotten. People will ask me over at the Tree of Knowledge, and Dave knows this, where's the water?
Where's the water? Yeah.
And it's like, well, which water do you want?
Right.
Because just turn around and go 150 feet, and you'll find
water.
The river.
Yep.
Actually been asked where the ocean is too.
I've got that too.
Yeah, which I always
the ocean.
Yes, I snicker at that. Yes.
Let's see. Start heading east. That is the closest of the two oceans.
Yeah, or I'll direct him to the blue line to O'Hare. Might be a start. Yes, but
I haven't gotten the ocean. I've got the water, but not the ocean.
Well. No, it's true. It's true. And of course, that might be the only way you get to Tribune Tower today is by ocean liner given
Sam, how was the drive-in?
It's like that scene in Star Wars when there's only one way to blow up the Death Star. You have to go in that exact direction to get inside. That's where I had to go to get to work today. Not that this is good for the radio, but I got off Ohio and just came straight across east, and everything was blocked off. And I asked the cop, how do I get to work? And he said, good luck. So
wow.
There you have it.
Wow.
That's your traffic update on the on the sevens.
There are all kinds of closures on the map here that are, I mean, just it's all red in through the downtown area with all these closures. The closures being the rock and roll half marathon is what we're talking
about. I guess I could have just turned over the show to you for the 2-hour street closing.
Oh, we could
report.
Have continued to read each and every one. Yes, that's
and
right.
And what time are these streets reopening?
Well, there'll be rolling closures, but everything will be over around 3 o'clock. So it's going to be a long day.
Oh, Dean's going to be in such a good mood when he gets here.
If he gets in, yeah.
Wow.
Also, the Pitchfork Music Festival is at Union Park.
Yeah, what was up with all of these concerts
Ogden
yesterday?
At Washington. Well, it's summer.
Well,
you know?
I know, but I mean, you had Jimmy Buffett at Wrigley Field. You had Pitchfork going on. Fish at Northerly Island. I think might have been the couple out in the southwest suburbs. I mean, it was crazy time. If you had to be able to find some music in this town, that's for sure.
You could find it.
Wow. I mean, plenty of the parrot heads in town too.
Well, for that, sure. Especially, you know, at Wrigley Field, that would be fun.
But they were downtown. You could automatically tell where they were headed because they were all dressed in kind of their finest Margaritaville costuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I haven't heard any reports from the concert, but I can't imagine. It was such a beautiful night. I mean,
I'm sure it was fine.
Jimmy Buffett, I'll listen to it, but I don't know that I could do a concert.
Shawnee, did you tell Rick about your new jewelry you almost came across yesterday?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Shawnee almost made out with Randy Hundley's World Series ring.
Walked away with it.
Almost. He thought about it. You could see the hamster spinning in his head. He put the ring on.
Then the smoke started coming out of his ears when the hamster wheel turned.
I thought he was going to be a flight risk with that Cubs ring on. He had it on, all the diamonds and rubies and all the shiny stuff on the ring, and I thought
pictures
he was going
to
book
prove it. Too.
Yeah, he's got the
pictures. You took the picture.
Yep.
Wow.
That was an honor. That really was. That was neat. I couldn't believe how generous he was with that. You know, just letting everybody. And there were times when it actually was out of his sight, you know, being passed around to everybody. And he was very, very cordial about it. But
glad it didn't end up at the bottom of the pool.
Yeah. Well, that had been. I won't go there.
Okay. All right. We'll let that alone.
The bottom line is it did not. It went. It ultimately ended up safely back in the hands of the person who claims ownership, Randy Hundley.
Of the Reb,
but
yes.
It was a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. No. Those things are gorgeous.
Yes.
They really are.
Yeah.
I mean, and talk about, you know, what a lifetime reminder too.
Oh yeah. Yep.
A ring like that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yep. Fantastic. Well, we've got a lot to talk about here on the show today. Dave's going to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam's got all of our sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. Our text line is also that same number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSundaySpin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here on the board. He's also tasting grill rubs for his barbecue tonight. Remember, as always, if you have to tune away, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break on this bright and beautiful Sunday morning in July in Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Wasting away.
For my lost sugar salt.
Jimmy Buffett action here in the Showcase Studio, Tribune Tower, the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Little homage to all of the Jimmy Buffett fans that were in town for the concert last night. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and lots of things going on this morning. Dave mentioned it during the newscast that U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has put off a vote on the repeal and replacement plans by Senate Republicans of the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. That vote being put off because Senator John McCain is recovering from surgery, a blood clot near his eye. And the fact that McConnell is delaying a vote on this shows just how close that vote will be. And this is merely a vote on a procedural roll call to allow the legislation to be considered. So it's not clear that McConnell has the 50 votes for that yet. Of course, we've got the issue of all of the revelations about Donald Trump Jr. meeting with a Russian lawyer after being promised that she had dirt on Hillary Clinton's campaign, an email saying it was part of the Russian government support for the Trump presidency. In Paris for Bastille Day, the president said anyone would have taken that meeting.
My son is a wonderful young man. He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer, but a Russian lawyer. It was a short meeting. It was a meeting that went very, very quickly, very fast. Two other people in the room, I guess one of them left almost immediately, and the other one was not really focused on the meeting. I do think this, I think from a practical standpoint, most people would have taken that meeting. It's called opposition research or even research into your opponent.
Now, also in Paris, the president, while saying nothing happened at that meeting, we also now there are revelations that there were at least eight people in this meeting. That included, of course, the Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, campaign chairman, Jared Kushner, the son-in-law, the Russian lawyer, an interpreter, and then revelations that a man suspected to be involved in Russian hacking in the past also was at that meeting. But the president went on to say in Paris that, you know, maybe this is all because of Loretta Lynch.
He listened. I guess they talked about, as I see it, they talked about adoption and some things. Adoption wasn't even a part of the campaign. But nothing happened from the meeting. Zero happened from the meeting. And honestly, I think the press made a very big deal over something that really a lot of people would do. Now, the lawyer that went to the meeting, I see that she was in the halls of Congress also. Somebody said that her visa or her passport to come into the country was approved by Attorney General Lynch. Now, maybe that's wrong. I just heard that a little while ago, but it's a little surprised to hear that. So she was here because of Lynch.
So actually, that's not the case. Surprised to say that Loretta Lynch and the U.S. Justice Department did not have anything to do with the Russian lawyer's visit at the time of this meeting, that in fact the State Department had granted her a visa to be in the country. So nevertheless, you have the Twitter-in-chief this morning. Hillary Clinton can illegally get the questions to the debate and delete 33,000 emails, but my son Don is being scorned by the fake news media. That's one of several tweets he has this morning, along with all of its phony unnamed sources and highly slanted and even fraudulent reporting, fake news is distorting democracy in our country. That coming from President Donald Trump this morning, courtesy of our friends at Twitter. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook. The representative has announced that she will be stepping down from the General Assembly. We'll talk about her decision on that. We'll talk to her about the politics of Springfield these days, and as well as the kind of temperature of Springfield, given some mass shakeups in Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's administration. Mm-hmm. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Just a little bit further in our spin through national politics. So we now have the Trump campaign speaking to Russians under the guise that the Russians had dirt on the Clinton presidential campaign. But if you remember, all of the declarations by the Trump camp that no such thing ever happened. Declarations from Paul Manafort, who was in the meeting. Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway, Vice President Pence, and yes, even the president himself.
Are there any ties between Mr. Trump, you or your campaign, and Putin and his regime?
No, there are not. It's absurd. And, you know, there's no basis to it.
Did anyone involved in the Trump campaign have any contact with Russians trying to meddle with the election?
Absolutely not. And I discussed that with the president-elect just last night. Those conversations never happened.
Was there any contact in any way between Trump or his associates and the Kremlin or cutouts they had?
Of course not. Why would there be any contacts between the campaign?
Can you say whether you are aware that anyone who advised your campaign had contacts with Russia during the course of the election?
Well, I told you, General Flynn obviously was dealing, so that's one person, but he was dealing as he should have been.
During the election?
No, nobody that I know of. I have nothing to do with Russia. To the best of my knowledge, no person that I deal with does.
So there you have that kind of compilation there. And now we know what we know. Senator Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, told CBS that all of those previous denials have now been disproven.
The last 24 hours is the first time that the public has seen evidence that Trump officials actually were willing to accept information that was part of a Russian government effort to hurt Hillary Clinton and promote Donald Trump. And what's disturbing to me is not only that fact, but that once again we've seen a pattern that has started right after the election, through the transition, and throughout this administration, where now it's more than a dozen Trump campaign or transition or current administration officials have constantly said they had no conversations with Russians, they didn't know anything about any of these kind of this intervention on behalf of the Russian government to intervene in our elections. Candidly, those kind of comments have now been disproven.
That's Democratic Senator Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Well, we're going to switch gears now, move more local and closer to home. And joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook, an assistant Democratic leader in the chamber. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Oh, come on. It's Sunday morning. You've got other things you'd rather be doing.
No, nothing.
That's very kind of you to say. I wanted to have you on because now we have the session in a break, as it were, but largely over. We've got a budget. We've got a tax increase. But we also have the fact that you announced that you were going to be leaving the General Assembly. And I guess I'm kind of curious if all of the last 2.5 years and the impasse and the divisions and the splits have just, and you're not the only one that's stepping down, but whether it's just taking a toll on trying to do what you all were elected to do and wanted to do.
Certainly there's a lot of frustration, I think, that you hear from members about the way that government is functioning or not functioning right now, and what the impact that has on our own personal psyches and the body as a whole. For me, you know, I've been there 15 years. That's a good long time. And I feel like it's time for me to step aside and bring in some fresh, new, energetic leadership.
But do you still plan on being involved in public service or politically active, or?
I'm not moving, so I still plan on being involved in local Democratic Party politics in my area. What my future holds, I don't really know. I don't have any concrete plans about, you know, that I have another job to go to or another, you know, specific thing that I'm going to be doing. I'm going to take my time a little bit and figure out what piques my interest.
Do you have a time frame for when you're stepping down?
I do not have a specific time frame. We're looking for someone as successor, and we're taking our time doing that. And by we, I mean it's really mostly the Democratic Party leaders in that that represent the district, the Democratic committeemen, yes.
I guess I, in this past week, we've seen a number of shakeups in the governor's administration as well as with his political team. And we've seen now that he's tapped the Illinois Policy Institute, the conservative right to libertarian leaning group, for a new chief of staff, various administration members. We also see my good longtime friend Mike Z, who was the political, he was Rauner's first chief of staff and then went over to the political side. He's now decided to part ways with the governor and his campaign. I have to wonder if this doesn't foretell, if we thought there were battles before, if this doesn't only intensify the battles, given the agenda of the Illinois Policy Institute, some of the things that it's called for, proposing a budget with no new revenue in it, just cuts entirely. Other provisions that they've mentioned in the past, firing all the state workers, I think, and having them rehired so they don't have the pension protections. I believe that was one of their staff members wrote something like that. But with that kind of ideology going on, and that's the governor's direction going forward, it's still a Democratic-controlled legislature.
So those actions by the governor caused me some concern, and actually in terms of my own personal decision, sort of, not that I was rethinking it, but it made me feel pretty comfortable about my decision. I do have a lot of concerns about that direction. I read the Illinois Policy Institute budget proposal when it first came out and couldn't even believe that that was a serious proposal, in that they would completely underfund pensions, which is the very action that's gotten us into the mess that we're in with our pension systems in the first place, and slashing higher education. And if you talk to folks from Eastern Illinois University and Western Illinois University, those communities are struggling. They've got vacant storefronts. Professors are leaving. Students are leaving. It's just devastating those communities. And so I don't see how. I just don't see how the Illinois Policy Institute's proposal for the budget was at all a serious proposal. So that kind of ideology, I think, does just create even more division with the democratically controlled General Assembly and does not bode well for the next year and a half for the functioning of government.
Well, and there were even things that they proposed, like shifting pension costs onto local school districts at the same time that we're talking about a property tax freeze. And, you know, everybody talks that game about education. It's the number one priority. But when you see these kind of contrarian ideas being floated, and of course, being against property tax increases, freezing property tax, you know, it's a magic bullet, right?
Very popular, yes.
I mean, I do see the legislature and Democrats in particular knowing that the way the governor has kept talking about this property tax freeze as a political driver, that there probably will have to be something that comes out of the General Assembly.
And I think Democrats are for controlling property taxes as well. The question is whether you limit the ability of your locally elected boards to provide the services that the constituents may be demanding by taking a action in Springfield, or do we leave that up to the locals? And I understand that's a very difficult and delicate balance, but it is, it is something that we have to think about in Springfield before just imposing a one-size-fits-all property tax freeze forever, which is what the governor had proposed, for 4 years, which is what he was asking for, or for something what I would consider more reasonable as long a two-year property tax freeze.
Something so maybe we can get a base level adjustment of where we sit.
Well, one would like to think, but so far every time I think we in the legislature, is the democratically controlled legislature, propose something we think is a compromise, the goalposts get moved and we end up with gridlock.
And how is that going to get better? When
I don't think it gets better with these new staffers coming in. if it's possible to get worse, it looks like it could get worse to me. And that's I just every day I wake up and I think, oh, it can't get worse. And somehow it does.
Well, and frankly, that's what I wondered about, because they are a very polarizing force. They're also have been politically active through their political action arm, and certainly follow through with the governor's mantra that it's all Mike Madigan's fault with everything. And I'm sure you even hear that in your district
sometime. Oh, absolutely, I do. And that, you know, I can certainly understand that you know, Speaker Madigan's been there a very long time, and so a lot of these things have developed while he's been there. I appreciate that. But government is not by one person. Government involves a lot of people, including the governor and the Senate and all the agencies that state government functions through. So it's, you know, it would be easy if it was a silver bullet and it was just one person, but it's just much more complicated than that.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook. I wanted to ask you about the issue of pensions. You have always been very much involved in that issue, and of course we know that's one of the chief issues when it comes to budget making in the state, with the large percentage of money that has to go just to follow the prescribed amount that we're supposed to pay for our public employee pensions. Obviously, we saw the one pension bill that was that became law was overturned by the Illinois Supreme Court. So much talk about Senator John Cullerton and a model called consideration, where if you do this, you get that kind of thing. And I'm not sure, as presently constituted, that actually would follow what's known as consideration. And also just the fact that we're basing, you know, in looking at that as a way forward, we're basing it on a hopeful footnote from that Supreme Court opinion. I'm just wondering, where do you see things going as far as the pension issue?
It is a major driver of the cost of running government right now, and will continue to do so. I think as the pension systems, the state pension systems, take a look around and see whether the interest rate that they're using to calculate
their
future returns, their expected rate of return, is that they need to continue to lower that. That then increases the burden on the state, and I think you'll see more of that. So there's going to continue to be pressure put on the budget by the pension systems. We did take some action as part of the bipartisan budget that just occurred a week and a half ago, to try to adopt some of the governor's proposals to create a new tier of pension system benefits for new hires, to cost shift a little bit onto some of the local units of government. So those were the governor's ideas that we adopted and made part of our plan. They have some impact around the margins on the pension payment, but they're not terribly significant. Not that we should, you know, turn up our nose at anything, but it isn't a silver bullet again or a solution to the problem. And to my mind, basically, the Supreme Court, when they issued their opinion, told the legislature to go find a way to pay for it. So we are finding that way to pay for it. It's hard. It will continue to be hard for a generation or a generation and a half. But we will be able to work our way out of it, given the fact that we do have different benefit plans
now,
and much less.
It's almost a matter of attrition.
It is a matter of attrition. That's exactly right. And so for the next 25 years, while the new pension benefits come into greater play, you know, we'll see more and more relief.
Well, and we had been talking about, for example, the Policy Institute, where they've just recommended that everybody go into a 401k style plan, which, of course, one, the courts would not allow that.
Courts would definitely not allow us to do that for those that are currently in the system.
And two, you still need to have workers contribute to the system to help fund the system.
Correct, correct. And that, and the actuaries and the pen, you know, the pension systems are very clear about the fact that they need those ongoing that ongoing income and resources in order to keep the systems as stable as they can.
I wanted to ask you about some legislation that you were very much involved with, which involved the issue of criminal record expungement. And, you know, we have seen this trend, you know, nationally, too, of, you know, what's really the cost of incarceration, what's really the cost of denying economic opportunity, you know, what's the belief in second chances, as it were. And I guess maybe you can tell us about what this legislation does.
This is the third year in a row that I've had the pleasure of working with President Preckwinkle on some juvenile justice reform issues. And the latest one had to do with expunging of juvenile records and actually also the confidentiality of juvenile records. Now, we all think that since Jane Addams instituted the juvenile justice system here in Illinois, that those records are intended to be and are confidential. And there was some research done to demonstrate that, in fact, they're not very confidential, and they're coming back to haunt a lot of kids who committed, either were simply arrested and never charged, or even if they were charged and did some time
and
adjudicated, those records were very public and causing them difficulties with jobs and housing, all the things that you mentioned. So we tried to reinstitute the confidentiality of those records and to make it very clear that they are to be kept confidential and that there are penalties if you intentionally disclose those records. And secondly, when you get to be at a certain period of time after the arrest or after your adjudication, you will be automatically expunged. You don't have to go before a court. You don't have to pay a fee.
And I think
you
that's,
just get automatically expunged.
And I think that's a significant matter because in the past, that's always been the issue of the onus of the individual to have to then take court action.
And if you're 19, 20, 21 years old and you're not a lawyer, which obviously we would not be, you know, how do you know the process? How do you come up with the fee in order to make the payment to get it done? How do you find a lawyer to help you? There's a whole bunch of barriers to that. And again, those just create further barriers for moving on with your life.
I know, too, about in cases that are dismissed, too, that there would be an expungement.
There would be. And so if you're there were plenty of cases where you just would be arrested, there would be no charge, and yet that arrest record would follow you. And that seems to me to be particularly egregious. If you've never been found guilty of anything, why should we be saddling you with an arrest record that causes an employer some concern, a landlord some concern? We just need to get rid of that.
So we're talking nonviolent offender issues.
Not necessarily. I mean, it could be something a little, you know, and I'm no criminal law expert, so I can't tell you right now but it isn't just drug offenses. It might be a burglary. It might be something like that. And again, all the research would indicate that the brain isn't fully developed until you're about 24, 25 years old. You make a youthful mistake, we ought to give you a second chance. We ought to allow you to be able to redeem yourself and prove that, you know, and move ahead with your life.
And this is patterned after American Bar Association. This
it is
not
this is,
like a concocted.
Yes, this is not some crazy left-wing idea about criminal justice. This is it's pretty standard. And again, the confidentiality is really important, and that's something that I thought existed but the research shows that it does not.
So this stands where?
It is sitting on the governor's desk right now, and I don't have any indication whether he plans on signing it. I get sort of mixed signals from some of the advocates that worked on this, but we're always hopeful that
when it comes to criminal justice issues, he's been very active in that.
And it is one of the places where the Democratic legislature and Governor Rauner have agreed, and there's been a lot of progress made on this front. We have a lot more work to do, and I would hope that this would be one of the steps that he'd be willing to take.
Let's go back to legislature's on call and intends to take a look at the other agenda items that the the governor had asked.
Well, the other agenda items, and we have one major budget item hanging out there.
And I wanted to get to that. And that is, of course, Senate Bill 1.
Correct.
That is the public schools school aid formula rewrite. And we've heard variously that he's going to veto it, or he might amendatorily veto it. And it basically comes down to the issue of there's money for Chicago Public Schools that exists in that bill that doesn't exist in the Republican version. Basically comes down to the hold harmless clause and how do you determine if you're going to hold a school district harmless, what gets included and what doesn't.
Correct, yes.
And the Democratic bill does include it, and that's the one that has passed both houses.
It has passed both houses, right.
And will soon be arriving on the governor's desk.
Yes.
Governor just promised the other day schools are going to open. I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure either. And unlike the budget where it was pretty clear that there were 11 Republicans that felt like that the chaos and the devastation that would occur as a result of the budget not passing was too much for the state to withstand. I don't know how that dynamic will play out with regard to schools. Now, certainly the chaos of schools not opening is a pretty significant item, but the politics of this in terms of it's playing out as the city of Chicago versus everybody else, I don't know how that politics is very different than the politics of the budget and downstate versus upstate and so forth. So I don't have any solid predictions on how this one plays out or how it gets resolved.
If the schools don't open,
eek.
Who wears the jacket?
I don't really know. I would think that, that
if
there's a veto involved and we can't override the veto and it passed the House with the bare majority necessary in order for a bill to pass with one Republican vote. Can we find 11 more votes on that? It doesn't feel likely to me. And so I don't really know, but obviously the legislature passed a bill and if the governor refuses to sign it, and to go along with the majority of the legislature, I think he could easily wear the jacket for that.
We'll stay tuned.
We'll stay tuned, exactly.
Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz from Northbrook, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
And thanks
I'll
again,
let
Rick.
You head off to that half marathon,
okay.
All right?
I will not be participating.
You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Republican State Representative David McSweeney of Barrington Hills.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue on this beautiful Sunday morning. So we were talking earlier in the show about the Democrats howling about revelations about Donald Trump Jr. and this meeting under the auspices of an email that said that this was part of the Russian government support for the Trump campaign. So you've got the Democrats howling about it, and this is a big but. It's not just the Democrats. Here's South Carolina Republican Representative Trey Gowdy telling Fox News that the Trump family needs to get its story straight.
Here we are beginning another week, this one in July, with a new revelation about Russia. And then the third, which is more of a medical issue, is the amnesia of people that are in the Trump orbit. Someone close to the president needs to get everyone connected with that campaign in a room and say, from the time you saw Dr. Zhivago until the moment you drank vodka with a guy named Boris, you list every single one of those, and we're going to turn them over to the special counsel because this drip, drip, drip is undermining the credibility of this administration.
That's South Carolina Republican Representative Trey Gowdy. Meanwhile, Trump's FBI director nominee, Christopher Wray, he was on Capitol Hill. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham asked what politicians should do if they get a phone call from the Russians.
Should Donald Trump Jr. have taken that meeting?
Well, Senator, I'm hearing for the first time your description of it, so I'm not really in a position to speak to it. I gather that Special Counsel
Mueller
would...
Well, let me ask you this. If I got a call from somebody saying the Russian government wants to help Lindsey Graham get reelected, they've got dirt on Lindsey Graham's opponent, should I take that meeting?
Well, Senator, I would think you'd want to consult with some good legal advisors before you did that.
So the answer is, should I call the FBI?
I think it would be wise to let the FBI
know. You're going to be the director of the FBI, pal. So here's what I want you to tell every politician. If you get a call from somebody suggesting that a foreign government wants to help you by disparaging your opponent, tell us all to call the FBI.
To the members of this committee, any threat or effort to interfere with our elections from any nation state or any non-state actor is the kind of thing the FBI would want to know.
All right, so I'll take that we should call you, and that's a great answer.
That's South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham speaking with the Trump nominee for FBI Director, Christopher Wray. We're going to go back to local politics again now, and joining me on the phone is Republican State Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills. And Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. We're dealing with the floods out here in McHenry County, so I'll be today stacking sandbags, and hopefully we're going to make sure that people are protected, their properties protected. So that's the major focus out here today.
There's been some issue about whether the governor has acted properly in this and whether he waited too long to show up.
Well, he's actually coming to McHenry County this afternoon, so I'm happy that he will be there to review the situation. He did declare a disaster area in Lake Kane and McHenry County on Friday, so I think he's doing his job on that one.
I wanted to have you on particularly after last week's show where we talked to Republican Representative Steve Anderson and Democratic Representative Carol Senti about the budget package that the legislature overrode. And I know you've never been a friend of raising taxes here. And now we have the increase in the Illinois income tax. How do you see the anti-tax forces moving forward?
Well, I think it was a disaster for the taxpayers of the state, the 32% increase in the income tax rate. There's some hidden provisions in the bill. As you know now, it turns out that the sales tax portion for E10 gas only will increase by 25% from 5 cents per gallon to 5%, to 6.25% on gasoline. So I think there's a lot of despair among taxpayers, and that's not just Republicans. Independents, as you know, we lost 115,000 people in this state. We have 47% of the people before the crisis who wanted to move out of the state, and I think this tax increase, I think, is an absolute disaster. I think it's going to hurt families. It's going to hurt small businesses. And, Rick, it doesn't solve the budget issue. Moody's, even on Friday, reiterated that they are reviewing us for a possible downgrade. I think the budget is full of blue smoke and mirrors. There are a lot of accounting gimmicks, and we can go through those specifically on basically skipping pension payments and fund transfers, and I don't think it's a real balanced budget. So my view is that this is a real loss for taxpayers, and that it's not going to solve our underlying crisis, which is we have $200 billion of debt in this state, and we're not cutting spending.
You know the financial world very well, and I thought it was kind of interesting. We had, as you said, Moody's came out basically saying that the state's still on a kind of a negative credit watch, if it were, for a possible downgrade. But you also had Standard & Poor's, S&P, come out and say that they viewed this as a the implementation of a budget. They viewed that as a credit positive, and that they've taken the state off its kind of negative watch list. I don't really remember seeing that kind of disparity when it comes to the bond houses.
Remember, the rating agencies are just looking at one thing. Can the debt be repaid? They don't care if you raise taxes or cut spending. They actually would prefer that you cut spending because the tax increases can create a reduction in economic output. But what both agencies said, even S&P, is that they are worried about the future obligations of the state. You know, we've talked a lot about pension reform over the years, Rick, and this does nothing to address the underlying issues. You know, Lane Eckritz had been a leader in that, and she's a great person, and I'm glad that she was on your show today. But she has spent years on that. This bill does nothing to address it. In fact, all that it does is basically through what they call smoothing, because the actuarial assumptions have changed, is that we're skipping payments. It's just a fancy way of saying we're skipping payments. And we should re-amortize the pension debt on a set schedule. We should definitely address the issue of the 3% compounded COLAs. And I do think through Cullerton's proposals with some slight modifications, there's a way to make that unconstitutional. That's the real issue, is we're not addressing pensions. We're not addressing Medicaid in a big way. We have a lot of accounting gimmicks. They claim that they're reducing the local government distributive funds by 10%, but then they're moving it around so they're actually increasing the payments by $90 million because they're doing direct payments. So really, it's not a real budget. I don't think it's balanced. And frankly, I think we're going to have some major problems in the future with people moving out of the state.
You heard Representative Nekritz say something to the effect of how the pension funds probably still need to readjust downward their anticipated rate of return, and we've seen that as kind of a national phenomena, that investments, large scale investments for pension funds, aren't achieving the rates of return that were once so lofty, and of course this issue of the smoothing that you talk about is a way to try to deal with some of that up and downward movement on investment returns, but realistically, we're still, I think, looking at rate of return that's optimistically high based on what we've been seeing in returns.
We absolutely are. As you know, they lowered the rate of return estimate from 7.5% to 7%. Moody's is using a much lower estimate, about 5%. That's why they actually are estimating over $250 billion of pension liabilities. You know, the usual number you look at is $130 billion. That's based on the assumption of a 7% return right now. So we have a major issue that is not being addressed, and we have to find a constitutional way. And I know we've had this conversation many times again, Rick, on this issue of the Cullerton proposal on consideration. You know, there were modifications that were being discussed for a little while that actually would give a choice but create some incentives. It was a modification to that proposal that I believe is constitutional. And I think it's very, very important that we address that point. But to your point, the pension obligations are enormous. The debt the obligations are enormous. And this budget does nothing. Again, it's accounting gimmicks. There aren't $3 billion of spending cuts. They're skipping pension payments. They're using fund transfers. And the only thing they're actually really cutting is the technology funding, which is short-sighted. You could argue that the technology funding that is being cut for fiscal year 18 will save a little bit of money, but it's going to cost us a lot more money in the long term. We need to update the antiquated systems in the state of Illinois.
We're speaking with Republican State Representative David McSweeney of Barrington Hills. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, speaking with Republican State Representative David McSweeney of Barrington Hills. Representative, I want to make sure I played that Blackhawks commercial just for you as well, just so you know.
Looking forward to the season. The Cubs actually have had two good games in a row, so maybe that'll turn around for us, but talks in October.
Hawks in October. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Looking forward to it. Let's look again at this income tax hike. It's a permanent income tax increase, which, you know, you can argue if the 2011 tax increase maybe had stayed in place, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now. But I know you've actually had kind of introduced a repeal bill.
I have. In fact, for a family with $50,000 of taxable income, it's going to mean $600 per year to Illinois government. And that's the other thing, Rick. I've heard from so many people say this is really the final, you know, nail in the coffin of Illinois, that they're leaving, that there's a lot of despair. They look at Illinois government, they don't see that there are any improvements that have occurred. They see Bill Cellini's family getting a lease deal down in Springfield. They see DCFS, the Tribune, as you know, wrote the series about paying cash bonuses to close cases on babies. And they see just a lot of waste and fraud. But they also see a lot of problems in the future with pensions and with spending. They also see high property taxes. And now facing a permanent increase in income tax is going to be very, very harmful to families who already are struggling to pay their high property taxes. I think it's an absolute disaster. And frankly, the thing I was really offended by is there were some members who on the floor said that they felt great joy about this tax increase. Well, I think that is absolutely outrageous because the people that are going to be hurt, the small businesses that are going to be hurt, they pay at the individual rate. They'll hire less people. They could move out of state. I think it's an absolute disaster. I think it's a complete failure of leadership by the General Assembly.
Well, I asked Representative Nekritz this question. Given the governor's strong focus on having a property tax freeze, I have the feeling that even politically, a Democratic-led General Assembly is still going to have to address the property tax issue.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's the number one issue besides the budget at this point. And again, I'm focused on the repeal of that Madigan tax. That'll only happen if we pick up 9 seats and take control of the House next time. But we need real property tax reform. They put a bill on the floor that was allegedly a 4-year property tax freeze. But what it did is it exempted the pension and debt service payments, and specifically pension payments, which obviously is a major expenditure. So in some areas, that could actually result in higher property taxes. And what people are really looking for at this point is a long-term, permanent property tax reduction. And you can only do that through consolidation of government and through real property tax reform legislation that has teeth in it. So I hope we don't put another one of these joke bills on the floor that really doesn't do anything.
Well, and I wonder about that whole issue of government consolidation. And, we see that all the time. The talk about that and how Illinois has more units of local government than any other state in the union. And I have to wonder if, maybe a property tax freeze is kind of an effort to, that's the stick about to try to maybe reduce the number or and consolidate some local governments.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that it does is it creates pressure and consolidation. I mean, there's an example I saw a short clip the other day about Round Lake. I mean, all the different governments in Round Lake is just an example. They all have different human resource departments and administrative expenses, and nobody can explain why Round Lake has all those governments. That's just one example. But I think putting pressure on local governments to look at consolidation, I have a bill that would allow citizens through referendum to dissolve local governments. With 7,000 local governments, that's the best way to actually cut property taxes in the future, is to consolidate those governments.
What about as far as school districts, though, under that guise of local government? Well,
they would have the ability. In some cases, it makes sense. In some others, it doesn't because of the contracts. It all depends on the contracts, the teachers' contracts between the different school districts. So across the board, you can't just say that it makes sense to consolidate school districts. You can say, though, in some cases where the contracts are structured in such a way that it would make sense. So that's why it should be decided at the local level.
Well, So we have the state that would ostensibly impose a property tax freeze, but then there's also the argument, but these are whatever happened to letting the locals make the local decision.
Well, under the property tax freeze legislation, is through referendum, citizens could decide to raise property taxes. So
or lower them.
Or, well, actually, exactly. But in the case of a bill that I have, is it would actually cut the property tax levy for all units of government except for the schools and community colleges. Those levies for the educational institutions would be frozen. But every year, if a levy if people want to raise that, they could do that through referendum. It's just referendum by the people would decide property taxes in the future. I think that's a much better solution.
We know that you're noted for your opposition about tax increases, but I'm curious, you have among the Democratic contenders for governor, I believe all of them have endorsed a graduated income tax and calling it a more fairer way to apportion income taxes. What's your view on that?
That's just the final nail in the coffin of the state of Illinois, because what they're talking about effectively is a rate as high as 11% in the state. We're at now 4.95%. That would drive more people and businesses out of this state. That's the last thing we need right now. I led the opposition to that back in 2013 and 2014. And it's interesting because the first place that I went is to get Republicans on board against it, and I had an issue getting a few of the Republicans to sign on, and frankly, those are a few of those guys are the ones who actually voted for the tax increase. So it's certainly an issue we need to be concerned about going forward, but that would be a signal to small businesses specifically that Illinois is not open for business if we adopt a progressive income tax. That's just a code phrase, I believe, Rick, for a massive tax increase.
I also want to get your views on the changes going on in the Rauner administration. We now see him going to the allies that he has at the Illinois Policy Institute to basically restock his top levels of government. What does that portend? I tend to wonder if it doesn't mean that it's only going to get more divided in Springfield among the Democrats versus Republicans, and we already have kind of some divisions within the Republicans themselves.
Well, I've worked hard, Rick, myself, to build coalitions across the aisle. I used to work with Jack Franks very closely, but I work with a lot of Democrats right now, Jerry Costello, Brandon Phelps, and a number of Democrats on issues. Christina Rasmussen, I think, is a very capable person. I've worked with her in the past, and I have not spoken with the governor. I'm going to see him this afternoon in McHenry County on the flood issue. That said, there's no doubt about a 32% increase in the income tax without reforms was a major failure. There's no way to dress that up. There's no way to say otherwise. So I have not spoken with the governor, but I assume he wants a new start, and I certainly support his efforts to refocus on the taxpayers. You're a big football fan. Remember Bill Belichick, after they lost to the Chiefs back in 2014, he had the On to Cincinnati press conference. That's all he said. He wanted to focus on the future. That would be good advice for the governor, is he can't look back. He's got to focus on the future.
All right. Representative David McSweeney, Republican from Barrington Hills, thank you so much, as always, for joining me on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Rob Carr. Rob is president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and they've been a leading factor in challenging successfully in court the sweetened beverage tax being sought by Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. So we'll be talking to Rob.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and clouds have started to roll in over Tribune Tower and North Michigan Avenue, but so far no sign of any rain on the radar. But, Dave, that's just my visual observation. I don't know if you see anything
I saw
there.
That, what you're talking about as well, Rick. And earlier this morning when I got in, we were watching some rather severe activity in western Illinois. Weren't sure of the direction of that, but that was moving, generally east in this direction. But, that may dissipate as the morning continues. But as we've been mentioning, a possibility of these showers and thunderstorms, nothing really like the rain that we had, several days ago that's caused all of this.
We don't need any more of that. That's for sure.
And then becoming sunny later today, a clear night tonight, and looks like a beautiful day tomorrow, mostly sunny in the mid-70s.
Of course, because it's Monday.
That's right. That's always on a Monday, isn't
it's
it?
Back to work day mm-hmm. on Monday. Oh, thanks, Dave.
Sure.
Mr. Sunshine, always. Last week, I had Republican State Representative Steve Anderson of Geneva on the show, and he was talking about his decision to buck Governor Rauner and vote for the budget and tax package. And at the time, Anderson was the House Republican floor leader. Here's what Anderson said on last week's show about his caucus leader, House Republican leader Jim Durkin.
My leader, Jim Durkin, is the epitome of professionalism in this. When this was going down, one of the things he said to all of us as a group is he said, I don't want to lose friendships over this. I don't want to lose relationships. I don't want people criticizing each other. He can't control that, but that's what he said. He assured us that, we are still a caucus and we can disagree, and that's okay. So I give him a ton of kudos for how he managed through this crisis.
That was last Sunday. On Monday, Anderson was stripped of his role as the House Republican floor leader. Jim Durkin saying that he thought that the caucus needed to move in a new direction. Just thought I'd present that little news update. Well, joining me now on the phone is Rob Carr. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and the IRMA, as it's known by its acronym, has been very active in the court fight to block the imposition of the sweetened beverage penny per ounce tax that was pushed by Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. Rob, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You know, I can't say that I've ever seen a group singled out as much as I have with the retail merchants in the responses from Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, announcing on Friday laying off more than 300 employees because of the county's budget crisis, and specifically saying that, quote, the personnel actions are necessary to address an approximate $68 million gap in our FY 2017 budget that is directly related to the Illinois Retail Merchants Association lawsuit and temporary restraining order. Along with the layoffs, we're closing more than 600 vacant positions. Curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I guess I find it almost laughable. It's a real attempt to rewrite history, and I think it ignores what's been going on their side of this issue. This was sold as a health tax, nothing more, nothing less. There was no real mention of any type of tie to lay it to personnel or hiring or anything throughout most of that debate when they first passed it. Suddenly, when they get caught in their hand in the cookie jar here, the proverbial cookie jar, when they are being called to account for not following law, for being in conflict with federal law, federal regulation, potentially state law and city regulation, suddenly it's our fault. I think at the end of the day, it ignores the fact that, you know, we're all supposed to follow the law, including the government. It's a crisis of their own making. They could have changed this ordinance to bring it into compliance at any time. They were warned for a long time. As we were preparing to sue in late May, then they suddenly started changing the ordinance trying to change the ordinance by regulation four times in the 30 days leading up to the effective date of July 1. So clearly they started to recognize there's a problem. And further, at her direction, the state's attorney's office is dragging this out in court. We've been ready to argue our complaint, the facts of the complaint, since day one. They have chosen instead to take what we think is a war of attrition and take advantage of every little procedural move they can. So again, Rick, it's a crisis of her own making.
Well, and let's face it, this is a very controversial tax levy. And as you said, it was sold under the guise that this was for health benefits, even though it affects a variety of beverages that are including diet drinks as well. And, you know, it raises the question again, is this part of the nickel and diming of the taxpayer?
I think it clearly is. Listen, I give her, you have to give her credit for years. She is relatively transparent on a number of fronts, and she's been transparent about the fact that she couldn't sell a property tax increase. She couldn't sell another hike in their sales tax.
Well, we saw a return, actually, of that higher sales tax rate.
Correct, and I think that's something else. You know, that was sold to all of us taxpayers, as being needed. Every dime was needed for pensions and bad debt. And then immediately after passage, $160 million was used for non-negotiated salary increases. So there's a history here that I think is coming back to hurt them.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of shoppers in Cook County, they saw the stickers kind of being placed in front of in the beverage aisle of how this is going to be eligible for that tax increase. And when you look at things like a $2.50 on sale 12-pack of soda, and the tax on that would be $1.44. I think that did create somewhat of a wake-up call for folks.
I think it did. As we saw in Philadelphia, frankly, Rick, the consumers all claimed they supported, liked the idea, or the voters did, until it became enacted. And then suddenly they recognized what the industry had been trying to tell them all along, the size of the tax, the fact that in some cases the tax will exceed the selling price of the item itself. And so you've seen Philadelphia's revenue projections being horribly off, which we think will happen here if this tax is enacted. And furthermore, you've seen a shift in sales to surrounding regions. We're not surprised by that, that the consumers are starting to wake up to this. And if it's enacted, I think you'll see an even bigger revolt by consumers.
Well, and when I talk to people about the notice that President Preckwinkle put out on Friday and 300 layoffs, but also that we're closing more than 600 vacant positions. And one of the responses I got was, why are there 600 vacant positions?
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you saw some of her fellow commissioners criticize her, I believe it was Friday, in a press conference as well, noting that there were vacant positions that should have been closed a long time ago. And I think they were also criticizing that there had been hiring going on in addition to some of these layoffs, so some going in the back door and others coming out the front door. So I think there's a lot of questions to be raised around this strategy.
I want to ask you about just some of the legal issues that are raised here, and I don't want to go too deep into the weeds on this. What basically are the legal arguments that the retail merchants are presenting in this?
Well, I'm glad you don't want to go too deeply because I'm not a lawyer. I just pretend to play one throughout most of my career.
Don't we both? Yes.
Yeah, we all do. So there's basically two major issues at play. One is uniformity. The ordinance that's in place wants to tax items differently. So, for example, if you were to purchase a sweetened iced tea that was to come out of a chilled beverage dispenser, it would be taxed. If you were to purchase that same sweetened iced tea handmade somewhere, it would not be taxed. If you were to purchase that sweetened iced tea out of a non-chilled beverage dispenser, there is some question as to whether or not that would be taxed. If you were to purchase a Frappuccino in a bottle, that would be taxed. If you were to purchase it handmade, that would not be taxed. They are identical items. They have identical ingredients, or at least are extraordinarily similar, and yet they are being treated differently under the tax proposal. And that is a uniformity violation. The other issues at play really have to do with setting retailers up for failure. So I mentioned at the beginning of our interview that they had changed the ordinance or their rules four times in the 30 days leading up to its July 1st effective date. The rules do not comport with the black and letter labeling of the ordinance. And as you know, while government can do many things, they can't ignore the very law they passed, and they can't reinterpret what was passed. They have to go back and change it. So, for example, the ordinance required SNAP products to be taxed. You can't tax SNAP products under federal law. It would put us into conflict with the City of Chicago's APS pricing rules, which is how you have to display prices on shelves. It would have required a tax on a tax, which is in violation of state sales tax regulations. So there are a number of issues that set up the retailer for failure, not to mention that things like how you resolve ice in a cup. It's by an ounce, right? So you saw a 16-ounce cup. Is that inclusive of ice, exclusive of ice? There's been no clear guidance. And retailers have to be able to reliably collect the sales tax at the point of sale. And without that ability, they open themselves up to consumer lawsuits. So we are being put in a complete no-win situation, and the county needs to resolve that.
We're speaking with Rob Carr. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is Rob Carr. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. And we're talking about the fizzling of the soda tax, as it were, in Cook County. And yeah, I know. And there's probably been plenty of bad jokes about that. But Rob, what is next when it comes to the legality, the court issues going forward?
Sure, we're in a period right now where we're trading briefs with the judge. As you know, we won the TRO. The county appealed the TRO, lost that appeal. So the temporary restraining order is in place. They then chose to file a motion to dismiss. Which a motion to dismiss is claims that we have not demonstrated a harm that the judge can solve. Obviously, we believe that to be patently false, but we are now going through a trading of memos, legal memorandum with the judge who is supposed to render a decision on the 21st, next and Friday.
That's on the motion to dismiss issue.
Correct. And then we'll see what happens after he renders his decision on that motion.
So if the motion to dismiss by the county is rejected, then it moves to trial?
Well, that's a great question. I think they could appeal this, their motion to dismiss, to the appellate court if they choose, and then they can come back, and then we would have a debate about the preliminary injunction, which would then put it, if we were to be successful, would put in place a permanent injunction of sorts until the complaint itself is finalized. But, of course, the county could choose to also appeal that, and then we would have that appeal. So, but throughout those appeals, the temporary restraining order would stay in place. If the court were to rule for some reason that after finding a TRO were suddenly to reverse itself and say, no, we grant the motion to dismiss, then absent a successful appeal, the TRO would be lifted and the tax would go into place very, very quickly.
During all the formulation of this tax, and obviously you stated some of the problematic issues involving it, but were there negotiations with the industry, with retailers, to try to see if there was some amicable way to put this in place?
Negotiations would be the wrong word. There were a lot of discussions with the county. We kept trying to demonstrate to them where their ordinance was in violation. And frankly, we got a lot of stonewall. That's why we finally said, okay, we're going to sue. We have no choice here. Then suddenly the county started changing, as I noted earlier, their regulations
after
about
the
30
fact.
Days. Right. And then accuse us recently of being the reasons that they're having the problems they're having. Negotiations would be too strong of a word.
Well, let's move from that issue to the I call it the end of the legislative session, even though it might be the end of the beginning. But obviously, you know, there's some issues on the table that you guys are interested in, that's unfinished business.
It is unfinished business. It will be interesting to see how seriously those issues are now discussed, particularly in some of the amazing developments that we've seen over the course of the last week, which I'm not sure we've seen anything like that in my time or certainly your time, Rick. So we'll see how those issues are discussed, yeah.
The changing of the guard in the governor's office.
We've seen some resignations from the assembly. There's a lot of rumors that we'll see more. You had on your one of your first guests, Elaine Nekritz, who I have tremendous respect for, someone we didn't often agree on but could always find a way to work together, has announced her resignation. I think Chad Hayes from the Danville area, Downstate Republican, has announced his. I think we'll see a few others. So the changes, I think, are going to continue.
But when it comes to unfinished business, what are you still looking for the legislature to deal with?
I think we do need to deal with workers' comp reform. We would like to see, from a retail perspective, I think we need to see a bit of a restraining of local governments, particularly the city of Chicago and Cook County. Home rule was never meant to allow them to function as city states. It was meant to allow them to solve particular problems. I specifically talk about labor regulation, which sets up an increasingly difficult situation for people who operate in multiple jurisdictions. Between those two in particular highlight some of the things that need to be addressed in Springfield. It's interesting. A lot of people say, well, if we just had higher taxes and we just had a budget, suddenly everything would be great. We dispute that. We dispute that when you look at other high-tax states. I noticed an article in today's paper about the outflow from Hawaii. Hawaii, where you would think everyone in Illinois would certainly love to go, it's clearly not all about the weather when you go somewhere. It is about high taxes. It is about having a business job-friendly environment. And so we need to address those issues.
Are you convinced that when you hear Speaker Madigan, Senate President Cullerton say that our work isn't finished, that they're actually going to address something like workers' comp?
I think workers' comp is a very difficult situation for them. I think the political environment in which we find ourselves, particularly so far out from a gubernatorial election, and I might add an election that's important from a redistricting standpoint, I do take them at their word that they are interested in trying to find some common ground on reform and potentially some other issues as well. They both, I believe, but you have to admit that at times throughout their career, they have certainly demonstrated that they have the best interest of Illinois at heart. I think, unfortunately, the atmosphere has become so toxic in Springfield, and the trust factor is simply not present. You know, Rick, that there has to be trust on both sides to get things done. And that's a component that's really missing at this time.
Well, and that's why I wonder, because, if you listening to various people, an agreement on workers' comp was actually close to be had in the House, but then agents of various politicians came in and pulled votes away.
Right. That was the effect in the Senate. I never saw them or heard them anyone directly doing that, but there's awful a lot of smoke around that fire, so I have to take some people at their word that in fact was happening. But the sentence that they were down to on a couple of the issues, I just don't think the will was to get there. I think by that time the environment had simply become too toxic.
I was going to say that things had just simply deteriorated.
Yeah, just too much.
And who knows what the future may be like in the new dynamic of Springfield?
Who knows? But given what we've seen, I don't think you can reliably predict anymore.
Absolutely not. And you used to be a pretty good predictor. You know that?
Well, thank you. Thanks. But I've turned in my predictor card for right now.
Fair enough. Rob Carr, President and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, always a pleasure to be with you. You have a great day.
You too. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank very much my guests, Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook, Republican State Representative Dave McSweeney from Barrington Hills, and Rob Carr, President and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. But most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening on this Sunday morning. And I think I'll have to go dodge the rock and roll half marathon road closures.
Way too many healthy people downtown today.
You've noticed.
Actually, these runners, the people who do the marathons, I've said for years, they look like they need a sandwich. Don't they?
Yes.
They look a little emaciated to me.
Well,
I don't think it's healthy, all this running.
I've never seen happy runners.
Right. Nobody looks happy when they're running. They look like, let's get this over with. I want to go get a burger.
You don't find them in the burger joints.
No.
I've never found the allure of running.
I hearken back on the wise words of the late great Bob Collins, who would say, nobody should be running unless you're being chased by somebody.
Fair enough.
I couldn't agree more with that.
I miss that kind of advice,
right?
That's
Bob's homespun advice that
the common sense
we could use in days like this in America. Well, good luck getting out, because there was no fun getting in, believe me, with all the streets.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it.